call on the ice stands. We gotta go.
Okay, fellas, we are set to go.
Let's roll, boys. Come on, let's get going.
We are kicking.
Here we go.
Both guys, 5 minutes each for fighting.
Watch the blue.
Play the puck.
We're not doing this.
Hey. After further review, it's the Scouting the Refs podcast.
Yeah, baby.
Here's your hosts, Todd Lewis and Josh Smith.
Okay, gentlemen, play ball. Let's go.
All right, guys, let's drop the puck.
I'm excited about this week's podcast, Josh, because we have some unique, original thinking coming up from Ken Daniels, the play-by-play voice of the Detroit Red Wings, and I like it.
I do, too. Ken has been banging this drum for a little while now. He's got some tweaks, one specific tweak in mind that he thinks will change the game, especially when it comes to the dreaded offside coaches challenge. So interesting to hear his take on this. Looking forward to chatting a little bit more about what the impact could be there, because we know how much everybody loves when a goal gets taken off the board.
Oh, yes, absolutely. This is the Scouting the Refs podcast. Make sure you follow us on the social channels. On X, on Instagram, you'll find Josh at Scouting the Refs. On X and Instagram, I'm at Todd Lewis Sports. Coming up on this week's episode, Wilson gets six. Politeness matters. Quit kicking me. Lee with a nasty knee. Abuse of linesperson. And we have seen referees say please when asking players to go to the penalty box. Now we have linesperson Johnny Murray with a nice little thank you to Montreal's Cole Caulfield.
Harris plays that to center.
Offside! Thank you!
Look how nice the officials are. That was very nice. The thank you when they get back onside. I love it. Adam Larson.
I was always told that good manners are important. Say please and thank you. Good on Johnny Murray.
Yeah, you know, he hasn't made it this far in the NHL without all the right tools, the right skill set. Great skater, great positioning, and a certain degree of on-ice bedside manner and politeness. So nice to see Johnny giving the heads up and then appreciating the effort.
First up on the program, Ken Daniels has been the television play-by-play voice of the Detroit Red Wings since the late 90s. It's great to hear him with Mickey Redmond on the Detroit Red Wings broadcast. He has also got a very interesting idea regarding the enforcement of offside. Ken, welcome to the program. It's nice to have you. Let's explain a little bit of how your thinking is regarding the offside rule. I think it's pretty intriguing to look at.
Well, I think, and it becomes more apparent now when times of baseball games are quicker than hockey games, and isn't that crazy? And how much time we're spending on reviews. So we've been on this on the Bally Sports Detroit broadcast as far back as when it used to be Fox Sports Detroit. So it's been a while now we've been talking about this. I just believe it should be the center ice edge of the blue line. As soon as the puck touches the center ice edge of the blue line, you're good to go, because from my point of view, from the net to the blue line is 64 feet. You're now changing the size of the offensive zone. If the puck, once it's in the offensive zone, has to come all the way out to be offside, why does it have to be all the way in to be onside? You've changed it by the width of the blue line. Just keep the zone the same size. And trust me, and you guys can have questions about this if you were to look at it, I would honestly say 70% of them maybe that you're reviewing now would never even go to a coach's challenge, because it would be so obvious that it's onside as soon as the puck hits a little bit of the center ice edge of the blue line. As long as it doesn't come out again, and you're going to have some where you have possession, it's not, well, as we say in the referee world, it's not black and white. There's going to be some areas there where you're going to still have what you have now. But for the most part, I would think you wouldn't even challenge.
So, Ken, where are we? So the puck is, as soon as it breaks the plane of that leading edge from the neutral zone, are we looking for the players to be behind that same line? Or what are we looking at for the player's standard for where their skates need to be?
Yeah, that doesn't even change, because now, before the puck, you can still be just have the back edge of your skate on the blue line before the puck's ever there, right? You can still have your other skate inside the blue line. You can be ahead of the puck now, as long as you're still in contact with the blue line or your legs on the plane of the blue line. No different. You can still be there. You can still be ahead of the puck. A player can still be ahead of the puck. They are now, as long as both skates are not all the way over. Even we saw the Boston-Tampa game recently. Steven Stamkos, I believe it was Steven, who had the goal called back, would have had his 30th goal. You look at it, the puck's on the blue line, and now they're toggling the tape and toggling the video, just waiting to see, okay, are both his skates all the way over now before the puck's all the way over? Well, as soon as the puck hits the outside edge of the blue line and your skate is still in contact with the blue line, go. That just now makes it onside. You're no longer taking the video and waiting and waiting and waiting.
The other interesting part about this, Ken, that you mentioned is that I don't know that many even considered before is using the different edges of the blue line changes the size of the offensive zone. It would provide consistency for everyone. And I think that's what everybody's looking for.
Right. And I think the league might be concerned that if they were to change that, although I've spoken to a number of players who say, what are you talking about? What does it matter to us? We're not even thinking about size of the blue. I just don't go in all the way over before the puck's over and it still happens. It would just keep it all consistent. But I think the league is worried about, in terms of consistency, those other leagues who follow them. But so change it. I think everyone will adapt. It doesn't matter to the players. I don't think it would matter to the line. The linesmen may have a little bit of getting used to, I suppose, but I believe also would make their job easier. And I think now, even with video review, as you guys know, I think the linesmen can make a call or not, and they know in their heart of hearts they're going to be backed up by video. And it happens. And I watch, these guys are so good. And sometimes you're looking and we're calling the game, we're saying, boy, that looks offside. And you go back and you look at it, no, they got it right, but they still have the backup of video. And I think everybody understands the game is so darn quick now with bodies going back and forth. And now you got a blue line camera looking for an eighth of an inch that the skate was in ahead of the play. I don't know how they get it right as often as they do. So kudos to them. I grew up refereeing. I bought my first car because I was refereeing in the old Metro Toronto Hockey League. So I know how tough the job is, even though my broadcast partner sometimes gets on them, but they still love them. We have fun with that. And I think they do a great job. And I think this might make their life a little easier.
Yeah, like Todd, I like the consistency part. Let's look at the same edge all the time. You do get a little more space when you're entering it. And I feel like when they introduced the coach's challenge, the league was committing to the fact that we're going to get the call right. If it's a 30-second review, if it's a 10-minute review, we're committed that we're going to make sure we do everything we can to get this call right. And it's kind of hard to backpedal from that, right? You can't say like, well, we're going to allow a certain window or we're going to shorten the time. But I think, Ken, what I like is you almost build in that buffer, that 12 inches of blue line gives the players a little margin of error where if you're off by more than a foot, then you know what? It probably was a pretty significant offside on the play. And if you're less than a foot, then you're going to be onside under your rule.
Yes. And I would love to see if the league were to go back and find out a time you spent on video and how many goals would never even have been challenged. Now, let's look at the ones that were called back. Okay, mm-hmm. Just go back and look at them. Would you even have challenged that under this rule? And the Boston-Tampa game the other night is the prime example. I've watched just myself, and I do enough Red Wing games, so I can't say they're involved in the Red Wing games when it happened, but I must have seen it, what did I count it at, 6 of them this year that I went, okay, if that were the center ice edge of the blue line, never challenged, move on. Wouldn't even have bothered with it. So I'd love to see how many this year, or go back to the year before, if you had the outside edge of the blue line, how many player skates are all the way over before the puck even touches the outside edge of the blue line. And if it touches the outside edge, where's that other player's skate? Is still part of it on the blue line, even though the rest may be inside and it's still okay now? How many would even be challenged? I'd love to see that and go back. And if they were to say, well, probably 70% wouldn't be. Well, there you go. It's a time saver and the game moves along and we got more offense. And isn't that what the league wants? So just go with it. I don't think it's anything for the players to adapt. And I think the linesmen would love it. And I think the situation room would love it too, because they got less work to do.
Just to put a bow on it, Ken, so fewer challenges, fewer reviews, more offense. The difficulty you're having, it seems, is getting anyone to get some traction at the GM meetings to get this moving forward. But it seems like a great idea.
There were a few GMs who were on board with it. There are some coaches I spoke to who are on board with it. And the players go, yeah, it makes sense to me, because they're players. And they go, oh, it looks good to me. So anyway, it's nothing for them to adapt. I just, you know, if you can even try it, the American Hockey League, I mean, how many leagues, I don't know. I honestly don't know this. Are the junior leagues all doing video review too? Do they do video review? They don't. So what difference does it make? For the players, again, you can still be ahead of the puck but not all the way over with two skates over the blue line and no longer in contact, right? Before the puck even gets to the blue line. Am I correct on that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. So as soon as the puck hits the outside edge, again, once it hits the outside edge, it has to stay on the blue line. You could have some where somebody's stick handling and it comes back out and now someone's right. offside. Sure. You could have that. You could have the possession. There's a puck bouncing. And when, you know, you're going to have some of those. But for the most part, I can't imagine that Moore wouldn't even be challenged. You wouldn't have the delay.
Ken, we appreciate the time. Fingers crossed that we can move this forward. Let's make it simple and easy for everyone. Thanks for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks to you both. Love what you do. Thanks, guys.
I think it's really interesting. I hope it goes through at some point and we can move this along. There's a lot happening in the NHL that we want to talk about from this past week. And also, Josh, let's make note that the NHL is ready to accept applications if you're interested in furthering your career as an NHL official.
Yeah, how cool is that? The NHL Exposure Combine applications are due April 1st, so you don't have a ton of time. But this is the NHL's annual, I want to say, recruitment camp. And there are times when they're focusing on lower level officials, guys who've made a career out of it. And there's also a portion that focuses on guys who are high level, guys and girls, I should add, that are high level hockey players that have that NCAA, that D1 experience, even minor pro, to try to expose them to what it's like to be an official. The guys who have focused their entire careers on staying on the ice, the NHL really wants to introduce them to the possibility that you can continue that career in hockey, but perhaps in stripes. And we've seen a lot of guys come through that right now. Some of the league's officials currently working in the NHL were fast-tracked because they had a good showing. They show that game knowledge, that understanding. Maybe they need to brush up on the rules a little bit, learn how to enforce things. But I think the NHL is really looking to deepen that pool of potential candidates for officials. And the Exposure Combine is one of the great ways that they can do it and really get a look at who's out there for future NHL officials.
Before we get to new business, one bit of old business carryover. The Tom Wilson suspension verdict did not come down before last week's recording. I thought he would get 5. He got 6. I figured it was only going to be 5, allowing for only an appeal to Commissioner Gary Bettman. However, look, I'm not much for conspiracy theories usually, unless, of course, we can have fun with them. So here's one. I'm going to suggest Wilson was perhaps, when he was informed of the 6-game suspension, he was also reminded that not only can the commissioner reduce suspensions, he can also increase them.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a nice, sneaky, underhanded, threatening reminder, because you're right. His 6-game suspension means he can appeal it to Bettman. Once the appeal goes to Bettman, then if he's still not happy, he can go to the outside arbitrator. But Bettman can amend that. He can tack on games before it goes outside. And look, at that point, by the time they get to an outside arbitrator, the games are already gone. Washington's use of Wilson in their playoff push has already passed. It's really just dollars coming back. And I don't know if Wilson figured it was worth it, especially with your conspiracy suggestion of that looming threat of, hey, I can always tack on a few more for you with this extensive history that you've had and a disregard of player safety in years past. That might not sit too well with an outside arbitrator, and maybe we can tack on a few before it gets there. Interesting. I do think there might be some merit to that, Todd.
Yeah, I'm just saying. You know, sometimes I think of these things. Let's go to the ECHL for one situation involving Norfolk's Simon Kubacek, who was ejected from a game and was rather verbose in his departure from the premises. And it initially looked like he swung his stick and contacted the lines person as he was being escorted from the ice. However, he was back in action, so maybe that didn't happen exactly as it looked.
You know, it's a horrible look for him, though. You know, leaving the penalty box, you're not allowed to do that. He's banging his stick, he's yelling, he's arguing, and then that stick swing at the end there looked like it connected. He did get tagged with an abusive officials penalty. He gets kicked out of the game, no surprise there, and either front. But I think, Todd, the video has to look worse than it is. If he makes contact with that official, you're looking at physical abuse of officials, you're looking at 20-plus games. There's no question. And that is automatic. Based on what comes out of the after the game, the officials do a report, and what they document in there is what drives that league disciplinary action. I've got to think he didn't hit him, because if that's in there, if we know it's a physical abuse of officials, he's getting tossed. And because he was back in action the next night or the next game, I think we have to assume that he hits the boards. You know, the officials granted him leeway to say, we know what was going on. We know what the problem was here, but we're going to cut you a little bit of a break. There was no physical abuse of officials. Hey, this was enough that I'm surprised even there wasn't any league action. He leaves the penalty box. He's arguing. He's doing this. I was not thinking it would be the 20 games, but man, to avoid anything altogether for this situation was a little surprising for me. I thought he should sit. I still think he should sit for a few.
Agree. He really checked all the boxes here. Well, except for the actual contact with the stick. Yeah. Okay, let's get into some game action now. Avalanche and Rangers. New York Rangers score on the power play, but Colorado does not believe that this goal should count because they believe that there is a hand pass that occurs on the play. So the Colorado Avalanche challenge for a missed stoppage. However, this doesn't really go according to plan, does it, Josh?
No, and I don't blame them for wanting to take a look at it. But when you look at the hand pass here and you watch the puck deflect off the glove of Trocheck right there, it hits off his glove, bounces right to Kreider. So yes, the puck went off his glove before it went to Chris Kreider. But this is not a hand pass. For the goal to be overturned, we look at Rule 79-1, and we see that the player has to have directed the puck to a teammate or allowed his teammate to gain an advantage, possession, control of the puck, all of that. He didn't direct it, and that's, I think, what stops this whole argument is Trocheck's looking to make a deflection. That's not a punch. That's not a push. That's not batting the puck. His hand is still on his stick. He's trying to deflect the puck. It happens to glance off what looks like the cuff of his glove, so I think they made the right call on this one. It's frustrating, Todd. I've seen enough hand pass. We saw one with Toronto a few weeks back where the player tries to bat the puck, misses it. It sits there. His teammate picks it up and they score a goal and the goal gets disallowed. It's really coming down to intent. How much do we see the player trying to move the puck with his hand? How much is he trying to push it to a teammate for that advantage versus did the puck just happen to hit? And in this case, I think it's the latter.
Yes. And I think the key point, as you said, is the hand is still on the stick. He's trying to deflect the puck. He's not trying to make a hand pass.
Absolutely. I'm with you on that one. And yeah. I wonder, and someone brought this up, I can't remember who it was, so forgive me. I'd love to give you credit, whoever I was talking with about it. Why don't we just allow hand passes? What's the harm? I mean, look, I don't want guys batting the pucks out of the air. And really, should we consider how much a hand pass should be a situation to wave off a goal? I mean, if you do bat the puck to a teammate, you're allowed to do it in the defensive zone. It's not the old days where maybe it was you're worried about guys stepping on your hands with their skates and things like that. We don't see guys doing that. But if we allowed it, would there really be an epidemic of batted pucks in the offensive zone? And would that really change the game?
Devil's advocate, if you allow hands, why can't you allow feet? Kick them in too.
Well, hey, you can't bat it directly in. I'll keep that rule because I don't think we want goal scored off a glove. But I'm thinking a hand pass to a teammate, maybe it's not so bad.
All right. We also had challenges taking place in the New York Islanders and Florida Panthers game. In fact, the Panthers had a couple of challenges. One was good. The other, though, unsuccessful for goaltender interference. Now, this is always so easy to understand. So go ahead and explain for us, Josh.
So we've got considerations, and I'm just going to jump right to the rule part of it, Todd, because we have considerations on contact inside the goal crease, which is distinctively different from contact outside the goal crease. Goaltender Anthony Stolarz is outside of the crease here. He's clearly out of the blue paint. So we're not even going to worry about incidental contact in the goal crease, which has often resulted in goals disallowed. Outside the blue paint under Rule 69-3 or 4, we're seeing that there is contact here. Boom, Cizikas hits him. It looks like it's skate on goal pad and maybe his rear end on Stolarz's mask knocks him a little bit short, puts him out of position and makes him out of the spot he'd like to be to make that save. So there's no question there's contact and probably worth a second look. But in this case, I have to side with the officials here and the situation room. Looks like incidental contact outside the goal crease. And when it's incidental, when you've got two guys coming together, Stolarz is moving across to make the save. Cizikas is entitled to his space as he's going towards the puck. It's not intentional contact. It's not a body check on the goaltender. This is incidental. It's in the white paint. So it's not enough to overturn a goal.
outside the crease makes a big difference here on this play.
Absolutely. And sorry, Todd, I just wanted to call out one other thing.
Yeah.
As you and I were talking about this play, this is, I think, a good argument for review. I don't know that coach's challenge is, I mean, I know why it exists, but look at the referee. You can see him positioned on the far side of the ice. He does not wave off. He doesn't stop play. He doesn't, you know, he's looking at the play. He lets them continue. He did not have the best angle of what happened on this play. So I think having the ref take a second look at it was great in this case, because if on the far side of the ice, he realizes that Cizikas went across, Stolarz doesn't make the save, but he didn't. But it's possible that he didn't see what the contact was, or even how much was there, how severe was it, how intentional did it look. So a situation where I'm glad, even though it had to come through a coach's challenge, that the league had a second look at it to really see, you know, was this contact that we want to allow, or is this contact that should overturn a goal? It begs the question of, you know, does it always have to be a coach initiating that request?
I like that. Good thinking there too. Okay, let's get to fisticuffs. Jets and Golden Knights. Vegas defenseman Nick Hague has a big hit on Vlad Nemestikov of the Jets and sends him flying. His line mate Mark Scheifele does not like that, comes to his rescue and starts throwing bombs at Hague. The dust settles and the officials look at this hit, major called, which opens up the opportunity for review. It is rescinded and only a minor penalty is given. However, Mark Scheifele bears the full brunt of the law here, and rightfully so. There's some overlapping rules.
Yeah, and I think we'll start with the Scheifele one. That's the easiest for me. It's the instigator. It's 2, 5, and 10. He goes after a guy for a hit, whether the hit's legal or not. If you're going to take that kind of action, you want to send that message and go after the guy who hit your teammate. Nobody's going to stop you, but you are going to get 2, 5, and 10 for it. And you should. And we've seen that. I feel like it's picked up. We've seen it called a little bit more frequently. And I think it's the right call for the right type of play. If you want to do that, it really is clearly an instigator penalty. I mean, Scheifele's going after him to avenge his fallen teammate. And regardless of whether it's a legal hit, whether it's a major, whether it's a minor, we can't expect players to know the difference. We can't expect officials to. So I can't fault them for calling this illegal contact to the head, which is what it looked like, and they downgrade it after review. The league gives them the option to do it, and those reviews are handled solely by the on-ice officials. There's no input from the situation room on the play. It's purely McIsaac, Blandina making the call here, and it really comes down to, was this an intent to injure? Was he really trying to headhunt on the play? And I think they got it right. There is contact to the head. It was contributed to by the movement of the player. He's bent down. He's reaching for the puck. Hague doesn't minimize contact. He doesn't avoid the head. It is avoidable, but it's one of those bang bang plays where I think this probably is what I would say a minor penalty for an illegal check to the head and nothing more.
Yeah. And Mark Scheifele really paid the price on that for his conduct. Okay. More majors that get looked at. The New York Islanders forward Anders Lee got a major penalty and a game for kneeing New Jersey Devils' Nico Hischier. Timo Meier objected to that as well, and they dropped the gloves. But after the review of the penalties, the officials looked at it and said, yeah, that's a major, that's a game misconduct, and rightfully so here.
Yeah, I think Lee, to his credit, after he saw the hit, after the game, and after he had a chance to look at it, realized, you know, he wasn't going for him. He said he was trying to make a stick check, and you can see he pokes for it. He's lunging with his stick. Once he's done that, his center of gravity, his balance is all on those legs. He really can't get out of the way or avoid it at that point. So I do agree with his argument, and maybe that's why there wasn't any supplemental discipline on this one. It seemed like a reasonable explanation, and it's the right call, though. It's a knee-on-knee hit. It's a dangerous play, and I think the NHL officials got it right with the major in the game misconduct, and I think player safety did as well. I think that's what it deserved. It deserved the penalty in the game and no supplemental discipline.
Okay, there was an interesting, well, kind of could potentially be dangerous situation involving Carolina Hurricanes goaltender Pyotr Kochetkov. He avoided a penalty, but probably should have received one and maybe more for his kick of Caps defenseman John Carlson. You see, Kochetkov makes the save on a shot from Carlson, who does give him a little poke. We'll give you that, but Kochetkov, look at the kick there with the left leg. You can't do that. That's a big no-no.
Hey, look, I'm not going to fault the officials for missing that one. You get a scrum around the net. Guys fall down all the time. It happens. I am going to fault player safety for this one because I absolutely think that that deserved a fine. Just to acknowledge the fact that he did it. Look, $5,000 isn't making or breaking Kochetkov's year. It's not a huge thing, but I think just to have that acknowledgement of, we had a goaltender intentionally kick an opposing player in the crease. And kicking is pretty harshly handled by the NHL rulebook. So I can't argue that he slipped. I mean, you can clearly see the intent. He's back kicking like a horse here. And if he hits him differently, if he hits him in the back of the leg, if he hits him in a spot where there's a gap in the padding, you could be looking at a serious injury. So I hope he at least got a warning, and we never hear those. But I would have liked to have seen him get a fine for this one, just to have player safety acknowledge that this was careless. This was reckless behavior that could have seriously injured John Carlson.
There was one fine issued, and that went to Buffalo Sabre defenseman Bowen Byram. He was dinged for interference against Ottawa Senators Angus Cruikshank. And I don't know what Byram is thinking in this particular instance, because he ducks nowhere near him, and he lays him out.
Oh, it was, I mean, I feel bad for Cruikshank on here. And I will just have to note that Bowen Byram and Angus Cruikshank are probably my two favorite names for any disciplinary related action that we've seen in recent years. But yeah, the puck's well gone. I have to think Byram was frustrated with turning the puck over there, and he just wanted to take out his frustrations on the nearest Senator, regardless of the puck being a good 15, 20 feet away. Clearly a fine. I mean, we don't often see fines for interference, but to me, this is one of those plays when you have a skater not expecting a hit, or what the league used to call blindside hits, those types of things. I'm glad that they issued some disciplinary action just because of how egregious this really was.
And I'm glad that we finally have worked in the word egregious, because I don't remember how many times it's been, how many podcasts, and finally the word egregious is here.
Good stuff, man. Where to work?
Get in the box. It's the Scouting the Refs podcast. Read more at scoutingtherefs.com. Follow Scouting the Refs on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Email the show at heyref@scoutingtherefs.com.
You're good, my book.
Subscribe, share, and keep those sticks down.
That's good play.